Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for July the 24th in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. Wow, man, we're live at Freedom Fest. I almost forgot it. It is Pioneer Day in the Olympic State of Utah. And for members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, why is it called Pioneer Day? July 24th is a day when, you know what, the United States government kicked out all members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in the 1840s. The Governor Boggs literally had an extermination order in Missouri against all Mormons, males, females, women, children, everybody. Shoot on sight. They were raping, pillaging, and plundering the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. So they fled to the Rocky Mountains for stability and safety. They fled to a territory at the time called Deseret, which stands for honeybee and prosperity. Anyway, but then we celebrate this as Pioneer Day because that's when Brigham Young, the prophet at the time, turned out to be the governor of the state of Utah later. But I digress, except to say he basically parked his wagon. He was sick, and they turned the wagon around so he could see, and he sat up, and he looked, and he said, "This is the place." That was celebrated or recognized on July 24th back in the day, and it's now celebrated in Utah as Pioneer Day. What a phenomenal day. What a day of remembrance, etc. Anyway, I digress, except for I wanted to just wish you all a fantastic Pioneer Day. And I've been known for giving speeches called Pioneer Patriots, talking about we the people pioneering our way back to restore the Republic and the traditions of our founding fathers, and pioneering the peaceful idea to do so using the checks and balances that our founders gave. Most folks want to go to revolution. Most folks want to just jettison the government. They want a con and whatever of the states, or a secession, or this or that. No, stop, people. Let's be pioneer patriots, and let's just stand for the peaceful solution using the checks and balances that our founders provided. Anyway, I digress. Wonderful. Pioneer Day, welcome. And we are live on Pioneer Day for Freedom Fest. All right, now, I normally, when I have guests on, I don't really create a hostile environment or a contrarian environment. Even if I disagree with a guest, oftentimes I just go along with them. I let them have their say, have their piece. And I'll tell you why. It's not because I'm wimpy and I'm not willing to have a debate. Trust me, I can throw down with the rest of them. However, and I'm decently articulate to make my points, and I can, you know, usually win an argument if that's what we're going to do. But when I have a guest on, my goal is not to layer them into my radio program and prove that I'm intellectually superior, or prove that I know this or I know that, or I'm better at arguments or better at debate or articulating with somebody. That a lot of hosts do that, and I think it's a sad tale. I think it's disrespectful. I think blatantly it's ignorant and unkind, and I don't like it. So I don't do it. When I have a guest on, even if I don't agree with the guest oftentimes, I will let them have their say. I will help them make their points, the points that I see that are good in their arguments. Again, because I don't really want to be a contrarian. I want to be a civility guy. I wrote an article back in 2015 called A Clarion Call for Civility. I mean to be civil. Look, I can help them make their arguments and help them make their points and point out the good things about what they're saying. Even if I have some disagreement, I don't have to always level it then. In the scriptures, for example, they say, you know what? Agree with thine adversary quickly. I don't think a lot of the times when I disagree with someone, it's adversarial in nature either. It doesn't have to be that way. But I want to explain last hour a little bit because we had a guest on. His name is Eric Madsen. He's the founder and trustee. He's not an attorney, but he's the founder and trustee of TeamLaw.net. And then the TeamLaw.net was created to help people awaken to the necessity of learning the law and to provide them with the opportunity to, you know what, peacefully find solutions. Right? Learn firsthand how we can peacefully and lawfully win our nation back. I love the concept. But let me explain why I was a little bit pushed back and gave him examples of why, you know, a lot of this isn't, in my opinion, the way to go. I applaud his educational efforts. TeamLaw.net. I'm not downing it. I applaud his desire to take America back. I applaud his desire to take a very complicated subject and simplify it, put it on the kitchen table so people can understand it, learning language, learning meanings of things, learning how to appropriately understand the separations. And I think for the most part, Eric is absolutely spot on right on a lot of things. I really do. But the reason that I was a little bit contrarian in that and saying, what about this case? What about that case? What about, and man, you can't win. It's too complicated. See what I told you? It's complicated. It's not because I want to be contrarian and fight with my guest, because I don't do that. But the reason why is because in this specific subject, it is not a matter of agreeing or disagreeing. It's a matter of if people start to take action based on what they're taught by Team Law, by Eric, by others. If you're not very careful, you can think you know a lot about a topic, think you got this, but then you get into the judge, into the courtroom, into the whatever, and you start making claims and making statements and saying things and filing things and doing things. That once you go down that road, doors close behind you and you can't turn around. You can't back away and say, oh, just kidding. Because the court takes this stuff very seriously. And as a result, any misstep can and will be taken advantage of by, in my opinion, the enemies of liberty. And when they take advantage of those missteps that you may make, then it might be very, very, very costly. It might even cost you your freedom, and you might go to jail. Or you might lose all your financial wherewithal or your stability. So I don't mean to be contrarian, but I do want people to understand to be very careful. And so that's a little bit why I was kind of contrarian there, is I want people to understand, you got to be very careful with this stuff. And I'm not trying to take the other side. I'm not trying to down what he's doing. I'm not trying to, you know, but I am trying to make sure that people don't get in trouble. And let me give you another example to make the point. A lot of people want to take on the IRS and not pay taxes. And they point to all this stuff where they can show that they're not liable for the taxes and da-da-da-da-da. I agree with them. I totally agree with them. But I will also say, in my opinion, it's not a hill to die on. Okay, you want your battle, you want to die on that hill? I don't think so. Because what happens if you take on the IRS and you make a misstep? They will take advantage of you. They will take you to the cleaners. They'll leave you homeless, take all your possessions, ruin your life. You'll spend years fighting in court with these people. And eventually you'll lose everything you have. And at the end of the day, will it be worth it? See? Now, it's true that I don't believe people are liable for the income tax. I agree with the naysayers. I agree with the people who say that's bogus. I totally agree. But I also say it's not a hill I'm willing to die on, because I believe there are other issues that are more important. And if you get too extreme on a given issue, if you're not careful, you go down over it and you regret it. It's kind of like most people when they get divorced. They look back and go, you know what? My marriage wasn't perfect, but man, it's better than the alternative. It's better than what I'm doing now. Now, if there's sexual abuse or other situations that make it very egregious, I'm not saying that's always the case. But in most cases where people just don't get along, they find that being divorced, the grass ain't greener on the other side is the point. Oftentimes, you might want to find out why you fell in love in the first place and kind of go back to that and bring that memory up. The movie Fireproof kind of documents my point very well on that. Anyway, I digress, except I'm saying I want to spend time on this because I believe that Eric Madsen is a great guy. And I think that the stuff at teamlaw.net is fantastic educational information. But I would say this, proceed with caution. Because I don't want to see people get in trouble. And most importantly, I don't want to be the guy that you know what? I trusted in Sam Bushman and believed in Sam Bushman. And man, if he was for it, then by golly, it must be killer. It must be great. Well, I think the information is great. But I also think that you need to proceed with caution. You need to be very careful when you start doing things that you know you're right and that you have the ability and the knowledge to defend it and carry it out in a meaningful way. Otherwise, it might go south on you. And I don't want to be the guy that I listened to Sam Bushman and then it went south, man. So anyway, I don't mean to attack anybody or be contrarian or difficult or argumentative or anything like that. I do mean to bring information to the table for your educational understanding. I do mean to let you know about Eric Madsen and the great work they're doing. I do mean to let you know about teamlaw.net for your knowledge. I do want to win in America. I want to save the greatest country. I want to awaken people to the necessity of understanding and knowing the law. I want to provide people the opportunity to learn firsthand about this, right? And I definitely want to peacefully and lawfully win our nation back. I want to do all those things. I want to ensure life, liberty, and property in the pursuit of happiness. I want to do that desperately. But I also want to make sure that we have the intention of our nation's founding fathers, which is to maximize liberty. And I want you to be very careful when liberty is in the balance that you make wise, informed choices. And I want you to follow the rule of law. But I also want you to weigh the costs, as Eric pointed out. And I want you to really think about, is this the hill I'm willing to die on? And for me, for example, when it comes to the IRS, I'm not willing to, so I pay my taxes. Do I think they're ripping me off? Absolutely. Do I want to change that? Without a doubt. Do I want to shut down the unconstitutional IRS and get rid of it? Absolutely. But am I willing to die on that hill and lose my house and fight them all alone? Not a chance. Same thing with the FCC when I had a license radio station. I wanted to obey all the rules. Look, I committed to it. I shouldn't have to have a license to broadcast. I understand all those things, but I'm telling you, those aren't hills I'm willing to die on. Because I believe that the work that I do is so important, not because of Sam Bushman. I'm not important, really. But the work advocating for the sacred cause of liberty is absolutely quintessentially important for us and our future generations. Okay, and I hope to be an advocate for education. I hope to be an advocate for solutions. I hope to be a leader in the principles of peace. I hope to be a statesman in the real traditional sense. I hope to be a man who is very reasoned and very kind. I hope to be a person who, when I pass away and die, they say, you know what? Sam Bushman was methodical. He was careful. He was wise. He was patient. He was led by God Almighty. That's who I hope to be. I know I'm a far way from that, but I can sure try and dream and hope, right? Anyway, I want people to be very careful indeed. So anyway, I don't mean to attack anybody or be contrarian. I don't want anybody to attack me either. I just want to say, hey, let's all learn and let's all work together, shall we? Quick pause. You are listening to Liberty Roundtable Live from Freedom Fest.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going
to
do that
because
they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats.
ELK.
Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt.
Auto-correct.
And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The
C-O-M-
day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
It's early. Yeah, it's two M's, two S's.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman live from Freedom Fest, man. I got Brad Rogers with me, former sheriff of Elkhart County, Indiana. He was term limited out. That's why he's not the current sheriff now, but he went and the people loved him so much they put him in the sheriff's position for two terms. That's as much as allowed. That's a sad tale to tell. But then he ran for county commissioner and won again, so he's a current county commissioner, former sheriff. Now, I got a question really quick before we talk about all kinds of things, Brad. Were you, if you skip a term, can you now go run for sheriff again?
Yes.
Are you going to do that?
Well, that would mean that I would run against the incumbent, who is would be the sheriff that took over after I. So at the very least, I would want to wait 8 years Let him do his two terms. It would be kind of controversial for me locally to run against him.
Yeah, you don't want to do that, especially when you were friends with him and he's a constitutional sheriff. Why fight over constitutional sheriffs, right?
Exactly, and he gave me a job afterwards. You know, I stepped down as sheriff, became his jail commander for 2 years. We had a good working relationship. There was no ego issues there.
And so the answer is you're not even close to doing it.
No, I'm now in the county commissioner's seat, and quite frankly, I won that handedly, 60-40 over a 16-year incumbent, and clearly, people, I think, appreciate what I've done as sheriff, and I'm doing well as commissioner. And remember, it's a three-panel commission, and so I need to work on collaborating, networking with the other two to try to get a consensus, at least a 2-to-1 vote on situations and things like that. So,
yeah, like declaring yourselves a constitutional county. Will your sheriff go for it?
He's on board. He says green light. So mainly what I'm trying to do is develop collaboration with the other two commissioners. I think one's on board. The other one is a maybe. So I'm hoping in the next month or so, maybe even we got Constitution Week coming up. I think it's in September.
Yes, it is September 17th and beyond.
I think it would be great to have that done during Constitution Week.
All right. Well, make sure you don't do it on the 17th and 18th. We have plans for you then, my friend. after that, though, get it done. Would love to see it. We'll do all we can to help it happen. That is for sure. Now, we were talking about the IRS, and I was telling people not to die on that hill. And the reason is because I believe that it's unfair in the courts. It's unfair the way the IRS has literally carte blanche to do anything they want to. They can just abuse you and file things and do things, and it doesn't go well. But a county sheriff really could interpose and change that game if they wanted to, couldn't they, Brad?
They could. And the problem is we're not mind readers, so we need to know what if people are having problems with the IRS. For example, I speak about the Fourth Amendment, the unreasonable searches and seizures and needing probable cause and warrants and so on. You know, it's the IRS is notorious for violating that type of thing, violating due process. They seize assets before a person has due process. So I always thought it would be neat to find an IRS agent that was violating someone's rights in my county and arrest them for theft or whatever it is that they were doing. But that opportunity didn't pose itself. But I think they need to be put on notice that we're not going to tolerate those abuses for our citizens.
So in my mind, the constitutional county sheriff could use the rule of law and interpose against the IRS and say, you know what, you can't do this. You can't come into my county. You can't file information on my local court or my local county records or whatever you want to say. You can't assert these things unless you have probable cause, due process, documented evidence, you know, signed by a judge, whatever you got to have, all the way through the list. You're not doing that in my county. It would be very easy for a county sheriff to just write a letter to the IRS and say that and say, look, if you come into my county without your paperwork in order, you're going to get arrested. And if you have your paperwork in order, let's sit down and meet about it. But if you're here without me knowing as well, you're gonna get discovered and you're going to get arrested. And I'm not defending each side of the debate. I'm just telling you that we're going to have due process in my county.
That's right.
We're going to have appropriate rule of law here. I will respect the courts, but I won't accept the violation of due process, and I won't accept the false filings in the courts and or on my county records. We're not doing those things. Can they really do that?
I believe they can. And there's a difference between, as you were talking to someone else earlier about not paying their taxes, whether it was an objection or protest or whatever, that doesn't mean that I'm taking that side necessarily. I'm just saying that it's important that the government is protecting people's rights and due process and going through the right ways of doing these type of things, whether it's charges or whatever, that's being done. And I think the sheriff can interpose in those situations if they're aware of it. Unfortunately, a lot of times this stuff goes on behind the scenes and the sheriff's never aware of it.
I think that's true. I know in my case, the example that I just gave, there's a guy in my community that's a good friend of mine. The government already took his house. He's fighting him in the courts right now. His point is he never got due process. He never got a fair day in court. They claimed that they couldn't because of the coronavirus, don't you know? And long story short, he's still fighting them, but he hasn't had due process. We called the sheriff, and he just simply says, I don't have any control over the feds.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
Yeah,
we got to replace it with a constitutional sheriff. But in my mind, it would be easy to stand up and literally say things like this. I'm not taking sides on this, but you're going to give him due process. You're going to give him his day in court. And most importantly, and here's what happens in the IRS cases, they've got IRS courts. You don't even get a jury of your peers. That's a violation of the due process for sure.
So I had a similar situation, if I could tell the story.
Please, sir.
You've heard of the Moak story that I've been involved in, but there was also...
Yes, but hold on. Quickly summarize it, because everybody may not have heard it. So,
well,
you know what? Spend a little bit of
time. We had an Amish farmer in Elkhart County that... was being harassed by the FDA, Food and Drug Administration, and then was subpoenaed by the Department of Justice to appear in a grand jury, and for that he bring his production documents. And his crime, he was distributing raw milk to food co-ops. Food co-ops are those agencies that you pay a subscription to, and you get natural food, organic foods, raw milk, things of that nature. And... So the Amish farmer called me and he said the FDA is harassing me. A typical inspection is usually annually, and he was being inspected every couple of weeks and being harassed, and he wanted to withdraw his consent because that's basically how they were doing the searches. The farmer just allows him in. And if you know anything about Amish, they're very peaceful people, hardworking. And he, you know, really bothered nobody. And so he called me. I went to his house and talked to him. Basically, he was being harassed by the FDA. And I said, if you're willing to kick a hornet's nest, I'm willing to help you out here as sheriff. And he was a brave man and wanted to do that. So I said, okay, let's go. And so I sent off a letter to the Department of Justice and told them that any further return of their agents to this farm without a warrant based on probable cause signed by a judge, I would arrest them for criminal trespass. And that was in 2011. And by the way, they haven't returned in 10 years. They have not returned to that farm. And the epilogue of it is...
Before you get to the epilogue, let me make a critical point. Not only did they not return on your watch because they knew you were right on the points of law and you were right on your authority as sheriff, but they also know that you've trained and now have another constitutional sheriff that's carrying on the legacy, and they don't want to cross that sheriff either because he will hold the same principles up as the standard, sir.
Yes.
I just want to make that very clear because it's important who you elect people.
Because the prior sheriff was under my tutelage, and he saw the example set, and I think that empowered him to keep that vigilance going. Well, the epilogue is a few days after I sent that, of course, the Department of Justice didn't take that line down. They threatened to incarcerate me and some other things. Of course, I'm still here and was never arrested, thankfully. But I don't think they want
to... I would stop you there, though, too, and think we need some attorneys, though, for them to threaten to arrest somebody when they have no authority to arrest. I think they ought to be thrown in jail for that, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, so they were... A few days later, the farmer received a certified letter releasing him from the grand jury, and we had no further issues out of that. So it just goes to show you what local elected officials, particularly sheriffs and commissioners, can do to protect people's rights. If they just take a stand, have a little backbone, usually the feds will blink, and you can move on with life.
Even the DA can help there, too, the local DA.
They could,
right?
Yes. Especially if I end up arresting somebody.
There you go.
So along that vein, and you know, we were talking about the IRS and just due process. Well, we had a situation where a neighborhood of about 90 houses had extended city sewer from Elkhart to this area outside the city limits because their sewers had been failing. The commissioners had made arrangements with the city to do this. And basically the mayor said, we're going to, you know, the people weren't paying the way they were or something. And the mayor says, well, we're going to disconnect.
All right. Hang tight. We'll let you tell the rest of the story in seconds. Ladies and gentlemen, former sheriff and current county commissioner of Elkhart County, Indiana, Brad Rogers on your radio live from Freedom Fest.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Mike Fortier.
The U.S. dealing with the pandemic of the unvaccinated. That coming from CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky yesterday. The Delta variant spreading among the unvaccinated. President Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci, says those who aren't vaccinated take a dire risk.
The bottom line is we are dealing with a formidable variant in the Delta variant and the extreme vulnerability of people who are not vaccinated, which will account for infections, hospitalizations, and ultimately deaths.
Meanwhile, Surgeon General Dr. Vivek Murthy blames misinformation about vaccines for low vaccination rates, and he says health misinformation has cost us lives. Plans underway to get Afghans who helped the U.S. military out of the country before a possible Taliban takeover. Sources tell NBC News about 2,500 Afghans who worked for our government will be allowed to come to the U.S. Others will wait outside the U.S. for their visas to be approved. This is USA Radio News.
You know, if you feel like you're stuck with a healthcare plan that isn't affordable or you simply don't like it, right now is a great time to switch to MediShare. The typical family saves $500 a month when they join MediShare, and what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to the typical health insurance plan. That's double. So you get a massive network of providers to choose from. You get telehealth services, and MediShare is the most trusted name in healthcare sharing. It's been around for more than 25 years, shared more than $4 billion in healthcare bills. Here's why now really is the time to make the switch, too. You can start saving each month, which is huge, but right now, they'll waive your joining fee. So you'll save another $170 right off the bat. But again, it's a limited time offer. You got to call now. And it only takes 2 minutes to find out how much you'd save by switching. Here's the number, 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE, 833-34-BIBLE.
U.S. airstrikes may not be enough to slow the Taliban's advance in Afghanistan. The airstrikes launched Wednesday and Thursday. Former U.S. commander in Afghanistan David Petraeus telling Fox News yesterday he supports the airstrikes because we have a responsibility to help the Afghan government.
I think that we need to work with the Afghan government to develop a plan to help them stabilize the security situation, which has indeed deteriorated very significantly since the announcement of the intent to withdraw.
Despite the airstrikes, Petraeus warns the Taliban still has strategic momentum. California's largest wildfire, just 18% contained. The Dixie Fire, covering almost 143,000 acres in the Central Valley north of Sacramento. Oregon's Bootleg Fire remains the country's largest, though. That's over 400,000 acres. It's 40% contained. Some bad news for Jeff Bezos and Richard Branson. The FAA announcing this week they have changed the requirements to be an astronaut, and those two don't qualify. While both flew over 50 miles above the Earth, neither meets a new requirement that calls for demonstrated activities essential to public safety. This is USA Radio News.
Back with you live from AnthemFest.com, ladies and gentlemen, day four. Riding shotgun on the show today, Brad Rogers, former sheriff of Elkhart County, Indiana. Term limits, that's why he's not there now. But he ran for county commissioner and won, so he's a current county commissioner, former sheriff. And I was talking about the constitutional county sheriff. Based on the rule of law, can they interpose against the IRS? The answer is yes. He gave us the milk story explaining about how he stood up for an Amish farmer doing a great job, and they won, and the feds haven't been back. It's based on the rule of law, ladies and gentlemen, based on jurisdictional boundaries. It's based on the authority of the county sheriff. Is he a supreme god like they want to pretend? No, they overstate that, too. We never claim that. We never have and never will. But he does have tremendous authority, and he should not. The sheriff should not live beneath his authority. Beneath his heritage, beneath his responsibilities and opportunities. So that's kind of the deal there. Now, Brad Rogers was coming back telling us another interesting story about this group of homes was outside of the city a little bit, and they brought some utilities by the city to these homes. And I guess somehow they weren't paying properly or something. There was a mix-up there, and the mayor said, hey, we're going to cut you off. Sheriff?
Yeah, thanks. So there was some shoddy auditing or clerk keeping or something through the years, and for some reason the people weren't paying their sewer bills or the appropriate amount or whatever, and you know that is an issue if it is. But what happened was the mayor unilaterally said we're going to disconnect these sewers, and so. The people contacted me and said, we haven't even had a chance to have our say, to have due process in court or anything. And so as a sheriff, I believe in the Bill of Rights that we need to be protecting those and from an overreaching government. And in this case, it was a city government and a mayor. And so I said, well, we're not going to have that. And so on the day of disconnect, I found out when the backhoes were coming down the road, and I parked my squad car right on top of the disconnect. I said, if you're gonna dig here, you're gonna put the backhoe through my car. And they turned around and left. The mayor was extremely livid. He said to his chief, go out there and arrest the sheriff. And the chief goes, are you kidding me?
Excuse me?
I'm not going to do that. And it's a good thing he didn't. But, you know, he stood his ground as well and still had his job. But that was extremely popular among the people. That was it was really, you know, a bully who was a mayor that was trying to exert his control. And can you imagine disconnecting, you know, 90 houses from a subdivision and really causing that would have made the nightly news on national news. So it's, you know, there would have been a lot of victims involved there. So my goal was to make sure that we had due process, that these people had their opportunity in court if it ever went to there. And if a judge ultimately said, yeah, we need to disconnect those in a court order, after hearing the due process, that would have been a different matter. But in this case, it was a mayor who was overextended his reach, and a sheriff interposed in that situation.
And let's be very clear about this interposition, because I want to explain it. What people are going to think is, oh, my gosh, the sheriff just acts like he can do anything he wants. He thinks he's a king. No, no, no. Stop, ladies and gentlemen. Don't buy that lie. Come on. Stop already. Listen to me. Here's the truth. The sheriff is simply saying, look, you're not going to do this without due process of law. The sheriff's saying, I might not even know the case about who's justified where and when and how and what. But that is yet to be seen. This is America. You don't just act like a mayor king and shut these people off. We're going to have due process. We're going to let it go through the normal due process situation. And look, if these people need to pay their bills, then they need to pay their bills. The sheriff's not saying that they don't.
That's
the
right.
Sheriff's also not saying that the mayor's wrong, maybe. And maybe they will be cut off at some point. Who knows? We don't know. I'm not saying we do. What we're saying, though, is, look, the people have rights, and you're not going to obliterate that rights because you're this little Napoleon King thug mayor guy that thinks you can just run around like a jerk. We're not doing that. Just because you work for government, that doesn't give you this special carte blanche authority to just crush people. And so we're going to basically let the process happen, and you know what? We're going to let the cards fall where they may, and I'm going to make sure that happens. That's the sheriff's duty, responsibility, oath of office that we're talking about. It doesn't mean the sheriff can do anything he wants, and it doesn't mean that the sheriff's backing the mayor, and it doesn't mean the sheriff's backing maybe the individuals in this case. We don't know, and we're not saying we know. What we're saying is due process is that important in America, right?
Yeah, and the epilogue of that is the mayor got replaced, he lost his election, and the next mayor came in and resolved the situation peacefully, and the people are paying their bills, and everything's fine, and the sewers are still connected.
Sheriff, isn't that exactly what we should hope for and want, for crying out loud?
Absolutely.
Why would they not want this? I don't understand. Is it just that they're on power trips? Is it that they can't back down? What the heck is going on with these kind of things? Because I believe 99% of the time, with a peacemaker in the middle, with somebody who respects the rule of law, a lot of these situations wouldn't be crazy and off the rails and just meltdown time, right?
That's right. Just a reasonable, steady hand on this, and that's all we're asking.
Wow. All right, what about the battle? And I think this is really important in this case to bring up. What about the battle between, say, a police chief, a police chief and a county sheriff? On one hand, the city's in the county, so it's jurisdiction of the county to some degree. But yet, if the city puts together their own, quote, corporation, that's the city, it's corporate, and then they say, we're going to have a city come, either a city council or a mayor or a city manager or whatever. It depends on the structure, right? But we're going to put our own police chief in place and everything else. How does that all work in a real world?
Well, so let's take a look at this. So who appoints the police chief? It's the mayor.
Either the mayor or sometimes the city council might decide.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or maybe a county or a
how
city
is the sheriff put in?
Elected by the people.
Elected by the people. And does that include the people in the city?
Yes, sir.
It
Roger
does.
That.
See, it's everybody in the county, including the city. So the sheriff has concurrent jurisdiction within the city. So, for example, so they know the chief and the mayor knows that the sheriff is the highest law enforcement officer in the county.
And now, let's be very clear, because he represents the executive branch. Right?
That's correct.
Not because he's a king, but it's because he represents the executive branch.
The executive branch.
The county commission and these city councilors, they're on the legislative branch, right?
Legislative and partly executive. So the commissioners are kind of a quasi-executive legislative because we can, we do pass ordinances, but there's also decisions we make on zoning and things of that nature that, of course, the sheriff wouldn't have authority over. But so it's kind of a shared executive branch level there. And but as far as a police chief, let's take that extreme circumstance. It hasn't happened, but just take an extreme example of gun confiscation. And let's say the chief of police starts confiscating guns inside the city. The sheriff can actually step in and protect the citizens and say, no, you're not going to do that. And overrule the chief on it and bring forces to bear if necessary to keep that from happening.
And again, he's not saying I'm king. What he's saying is we're going to follow the law. We're going to document
the rule
things
of
properly.
Law.
We're going to make sure that everybody really stays in their lane from a checks and balances point of view, that the citizen is respected. We're going to make sure this follows the appropriate process. That's really what the sheriff's saying at this point, right?
That's correct. You know, if everybody stays in their lane and does the right thing, we respect the municipal boundaries. We respect that, you know, by and large, and usually it's mostly for taxpayer purposes, the city police respond to city problems. The county sheriff responds to outside the city problems. But quite frankly, anything inside the city, the sheriff has concurrent jurisdiction and can still intervene if necessary.
There's a term that they use between the federal government and the states and the counties that I think works well here with regards to cities and police chiefs and sheriffs and a lot of the different branches of government. You know, there's separations of powers vertically and horizontally. The checks and balances are just so brilliant, Sheriff. And I bring this up because, look, our goal should be to ask this question and then to carry this answer out. How can the county sheriff and the police chief work together and coexist? And the answer is coordination. The answer is respect for one another and coordination. And the answer is respecting who's who in this process, right?
That's correct. And by and large, that happens. We have the sheriff usually coordinates chief's meetings within the county so that we're all on the same page. We can communicate with each other regarding criminal matters and logistical issues like, you know, for example, the county fair. You know, there's lots of security issues regarding that. We have one of the biggest fairs in the nation in Elkhart County. And keep in mind, Elkhart County is about 200,000 people. So it's a pretty good-sized county, RV capital of the world. And by the way,
Wait, what capital?
RV.
Like campers?
Yeah, recreational vehicles.
Wow, phenomenal.
Yeah,
man, I want to go to the county fair now.
So we, so by and large, our relationship with chiefs are very solid and good. And this, the hypotheticals I'm talking about is strictly that at this point. We've never had a situation where we've had to overrule a chief or anything like that.
And well, there's a lot of cases where the sheriff should be overruling the chief.
Well, if it comes to it. But fortunately, in Elkhart County, we haven't had that situation.
Understood. Stay there, sir. I got a whole lot more. This is the one and only, one of the greatest think tanks the world's ever known, Liberty Roundtable Live. Not because of me. It's because of who comes to the roundtable. This is your favorite hard-hitting talk station.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally.
the solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
The Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit legal foundation committed to protecting our unalienable right to publicly acknowledge God. The Foundation for Moral Law exists to restore the knowledge of God in law and government and to acknowledge and defend the truth that man is endowed with rights not by our fellow man, but by God. The foundation maintains a twofold focus. First, litigation within state and federal courts. Second, education. Conducting seminars to teach the necessity and importance of acknowledging God in law and government. How can you help? Please make a tax-deductible contribution, allowing foundation attorneys to continue the fight. You may also purchase various foundation products as well at morallaw.org. Located in Montgomery, Alabama, the Foundation for Moral Law is a nonprofit, tax-exempt 501c3, founded by Judge Roy Moore. Please partner with us to achieve this important mission. morallaw.org.
Delight, ladies and gentlemen, Brad Rogers with me, current county commissioner, former sheriff on your radio. And he's doing a phenomenal job, and I agree that we should have coordination between the states and the feds, coordination between the county and the states, coordination between the cities and the counties. And it can all happen if people don't get on whacked out power trips, if they respect the checks and balances that America was built upon. Checks and balances are not only horizontal, but they're vertical as well. The goal is to chain down bureaucrats and professional do-gooders and hold them to account via the law, the rule of law. We speak out for this. We say that the sheriff should not live beneath his privilege, beneath his authority. And we say the sheriff has tremendous executive responsibility in his county, and he does. Then they take what we say out of context and say, oh, these guys think the sheriff's just a god. He's a king. We never said any such thing, and we never will. It isn't true. But he does have appropriate authority that can be used wisely. And his authority really is to de-escalate. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not to get all crazy. It's to de-escalate and to use the checks and balances to say, hold on there, cowboy. Mayor, you're a little out of control, buddy. Let's step back and let's just chill out a little bit. Sheriffs are incredible at this, folks. They really are. And so we're talking about the constitutional county sheriff based on the rule of law. Can they interpose against the IRS? Yes, they can. Can they interpose in any situation? Yes, they can. And the rule of law is the goal. A jury of one's peers is the goal. Okay, the goal is to peacefully resolve situations in meaningful ways using the law and the checks and balances as our guide. So there's an incredible article written by the guy of Mike Meharry at the 10th Amendment Center. And he talks about Brad Rogers in this article, wisely so. But I find this interesting. The headline says, "One sheriff stands up for the people. He serves." Fascinating concept for elected officials, right, ladies and gentlemen? Anyway, in that article, Brad Rogers, and I want to kind of highlight what he says and then have you respond to that. I'm sorry it's taken me so long to get there, but it's important to set the stage for this. He says this, Michael Meharry in his column says this, as constitutionally sworn law enforcement officers, county sheriffs have the power and authority to step in and interpose on behalf of citizens seeking to face down unconstitutional exercises of federal power. I think that's well said, sir. Your thoughts?
Oh, it's absolutely true. And that's what I did with the Amish milk farmer and other, you know, the situation with the city mayor on the sewers. So it is very important that a sheriff understand the concept of interposition and be able to step in when appropriate.
There you have it. Anyway, I just thought his kind of pros on that, Mike Meharry, were brilliant. I think they're spot on. I think it really documents, look, the sheriffs aren't just on a bender to have power and to rule over everybody and reign over everybody and get into every situation and just meddle in everybody's affairs. It isn't about that. It's about the sheriff standing up for the people he serves, the people that elected him, and saying, look, you know what? I want to make sure that citizens have protection from the misuse of federal power.
And Sam, let me tell you a little bit one example of where I'm not going to die on that hill. So we have a sovereign citizen comes to my office and says, Sheriff, I shouldn't need a driver's license. I think that the Constitution doesn't require one, and I think you need to protect me from arrest when I drive through your county. And I said, look, state law allows for a driver's license. The 10th Amendment allows the states to, put in laws such as that. Even from a liberty standpoint, a true liberty standpoint, you might think, well, you don't need one, or you don't need a seatbelt laws. But, it's really one of those things that there's a lot of gray area, and I'm not going to die on that hill. So it's really comes down to due process and protecting rights, the Bill of Rights. So in the case with the guy who didn't want a driver's license, I did a little research. His license is suspended because of criminal violations. And so he's looking at an opportunity of convenience and wants the sheriff to protect him. And I'm just not going to die on that hill.
I also want to explain something that's really important people don't understand. I agree that God-given inalienable rights are individual. Okay? But understand, when we look at the Declaration of Independence, this document that says, you know what, governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed, right? That is not an individualistic thing. You can't have Sam say, hey, man, I want my rights, and Larry say, no, I'm giving mine to the government, and Steve says, I'm only giving part of mine to the government. And you just can't have this whacked out anarchy kind of crazy talk. So what I'm getting at is there are individual rights that come from God, but there are authority that we grant to government, which is not individualistic. It's a we the people. It's a body of people that give authority to government in limited circumstances with the goal of maximizing liberty, with the goal of creating stability, with the goal of making sure that vacuum doesn't get filled with somebody who would be more abusive to them. And so what I'm saying is I can't just go, I secede from the union. Brad, I'm out, buddy. Just skip over my house, 5568 McCarthy Avenue, skip over my house, buddy. I got a little sovereign block of land here, there. Okay, we can't just think that way. That's not the way our process and our system is designed to work, ladies and gentlemen. So I can't just run around and say I don't have a driver's license. Now, we might say, I think driver's licenses are bogus. Well, they are, in some ways they are. You could fight to change the law if you think, if enough citizens agree with you. Etc. But what I'm getting at is we need to understand the principles all the way through, not just part of them. And that's really the problem. Is I think somebody gets on a tangent and they're like, by gosh, I'm a sovereign. I got it. Me and God, it's just up to us two now. It isn't true, ladies and gentlemen. The sovereign citizen movement, 99%, in my opinion, is completely bogus. Not because they don't have facts. They do. They have a lot of facts. But those facts have to be relevant and in context, sir.
Yeah, I agree. So each sheriff and understand that each sheriff will make a decision on this, and each sheriff is at a different level of understanding of the Constitution, and some are more in your face than others. Like, I was pretty proactive. But you see, that's why the CSPOA, the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, that's what we do. What we do is to educate sheriffs on what hills to die on, and how to take the constitutional approach. And ultimately, the sheriff, who is the elected official, has to make that decision of his comfort level and, what he thinks his people will back, I guess. So it's just one of those things that each sheriff, and sheriffs don't like to be told what to do. They're kind of protective in that way. But on the other hand, you can groom, you can interact with your sheriff and get them to the point where they see that not doing anything to interpose is not always the best thing, and that sheriffs are there to protect people, not only from criminals, but from overreaching government.
Which is criminalistic as well.
I can't argue with that.
So I want to point out, too, that the way, though, that you work with your sheriff is not to be his friend, and then the second he does something that you may not exactly see it his way, or he may not see it your way, is a better way to explain it. That doesn't mean that you should throw the sheriff out and be like, he's a bad guy, he's the enemy, he's not fair, Look, you got to realize, ladies and gentlemen, that people understand and interpret the Constitution slightly differently. People are willing to pick the battles that they think make the most sense, not always for political reasons, but for moral reasons and for all kinds of reasons. And we need to give the sheriff as much grace as we would want to receive ourselves, okay? That's a critical principle to understand. You can't just be like, oh, man, he agreed with me 10 times. He was the best guy in the world. Now the 11th, oh, the guy's a thug. He's an enemy. I hate him. Okay, stop. You got to put things in context and give him the benefit of the doubt. If he's been with the people on 10 things out of 11 and one choice he makes is not something that you think is right, you could try to influence him and patiently work with him. But let's be very careful to not turn on those who truly are in our camp. That's something that I find the Patriots do often, too, is they just get crazy, wrongfully so. And if we're not very careful, sheriffs standing up for the people they serve is important, but give them a little bit of latitude and a whole lot of grace, would you please? Now, I'm just an average citizen. I'm just telling you how I see it, and that's probably worth it what I'm charging you for it, right?
And keep in mind that what the oath of office says, I take the oath of office, it says, I, Bradley Rogers, I promise to defend and uphold the Constitution to the best of my ability, so help me God. Now, so what's the best of my ability? The founding fathers were so wise in Article 6, Section 3 to put the oath in the Constitution because they all knew that there would be evil men who would try to, undercut the Constitution. But like all of us, it's men who can make mistakes. But if we all stand together and keep our oath of office, then the Constitution will stand. So that's the key. And so you want to
work. And the checks and balances is to protect us from the mistakes of an individual or a small group as well, right?
Exactly. And so that checks and balances are in place, but the oath is in place. And, you should remind your sheriff of the oath diplomatically and then teach him what that means. Because we don't teach about oaths anymore. We don't teach about the Constitution of what that means. And so... you just look at so many other things that have oaths and how people violate them. So how would we expect fully someone who has been raised without the Constitution education and then is all of a sudden taking an oath? That's why I wanted to give education to my employees on what the Constitution said. I'm not going to worry about the part of the Constitution that focuses on the president and Congress and things of that nature. But the Bill of Rights specifically, which law enforcement would be involved is the most important part, and we need to make sure we're protecting that.
Well, and as you hope to give them a love for the Constitution in parts that are relevant or sections that are relevant for their position, you're also hoping that they will decide that it's an important thing for them to
absolutely
understand fully on their own, and support for that can absolutely be provided. For sure. Last headline I want to give you, Sheriff Rogers, and this is very interesting. I want to get your take. George Soros gives $1 million to defund the police movement as violent crime rages across the country. These people are unhinged, sir. They're crazy.
Well, I don't think they know what they're asking. They may mean well, but so as a former police officer, one of the things I look at is, what are they trying to accomplish? And I think that one of the many things is they don't want police brutality. I totally get that. I don't want that either. And we don't want racial disparity. We don't want racial profiling, things of that nature. We just want fair and equitable enforcement of the law and then making sure we're protecting people's rights along the way. I think that you got to watch what you ask for because you might get it. And that is, police officers are leaving in droves. They're retiring. Their applicants are just not coming forward. Chiefs and sheriffs everywhere are having trouble filling open positions. And corrections officers in Elkhart County, for example, we're down 28 corrections officers out of 90. So, that's nearly a third of the corrections officers. And we're using patrol officers off the street to actually guard the inmates in the jail because of not able to get the applicants. So, and it's not all about pay. Some of it is just about image and trying to get qualified applicants.
Well, I want to make this statement right now. The best way you can literally back off the cops from being too aggressive and belligerent, the way you can best have the police serve you the peace officer, understand to protect and serve and depend or defend and all these different things that we want, is to look at the county sheriff, teach him to be constitutional, have him have training for his agents in de-escalation and constitutionality, defending the Bill of Rights, and that's your best bet to have meet in the middle and have real solutions on the table. You got 10 seconds, Brad.
Sam, good being with you today. Appreciate you.
Brad Rogers, ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you right now, hard-hitting talk at Freedom Fest. God save the Republic of the United States of America.